from the Finley Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company.
My God! Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
What's the procedure, everyone? What's the procedure?
Stay calm!
Wait.
Everybody calm down! No!
Adam Hill.
That's all right. Sounds like an excellent idea.
Adam Candy.
I'm a man who discovered the wheel and built the Eiffel Tower out of metal and brawn. That's what kind of man I am.
Chrissy Paradis.
Any artist out there want to be an artist and want to stay a star, don't want to have to worry about the executive producer trying to be all in the video, all on the record, dancing. Woo! Come to Death Row.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Okay, that's it. This right here is the get hit line. Cross it at your own risk.
You made it, everyone. It's after 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. Cofield and Company with no Cofield. You got all company, a couple of Adams and a Chrissy here on Friday. I am not going to jerk you around. I'm not going to make you wait. Because anyone who was with us roughly 3 minutes ago just heard that Adam Hill has breaking news on a completely unknown story. Yes. And when a professional reporter tells you that he has breaking news on a big story, you don't sit around and wait for it. Big Five at Five time.
Battle Born Injury Lawyers presents the Big Five at Five. Number five.
Well, this is your inexperience showing, Adam, because when I have something obsessed, when I'm obsessed about something or it's breaking, it's very, very goofy or silly or offbeat. Adam, have you seen the documentary Mommy Dead and Dearest?
No, but judging by Chrissy's reaction, she has.
Okay. Chrissy has seen it.
It's horrifying.
It's also, I believe, the subject of The Act on Netflix that's just out right now, which I have not watched yet. I highly recommend this for everyone out there just to be disturbed and horrified on every single level. We talk about a lot of things that I watch that are very disturbing and horrifying, from Abducted in Plain Sight to Leaving Neverland to many other things. But Mommy, Dead, and Dearest, Adam, is about a woman who has the Munchausen by proxy syndrome, who basically tells her daughter that she can't walk, that she has cancer, that she can't digest hard food or solid food, and then uses her daughter's illness, which is fake, to control her daughter, but to also get a lot of things from, like, you know, trips to Disney World. That's all these sorts of things. The way that she controls this girl is horrifying. Now, in the end, the girl rebels, gets very out there, because she's not allowed to meet anybody or talk to anybody. So gets very sexually depraved and, like, meets a guy that, like, basically turns her kind of into a, like, sexual deviant, essentially, because she doesn't really understand relation. It's crazy, but they kill the mom, of course, because why wouldn't you? Now, Gypsy Rose Blanchard is now famous from this. She is the girl who is in jail for murdering her mom. A lot of people have seen this. It's very disturbing. But here's the thing. Gypsy's engaged. She has married her prison, or she has got engaged to her prison pen pal. I love this. I am so happy about this. It is really just showing me that life can be okay for everyone. Gypsy has a fiance, and they're going to get married.
See, love after lockup. It exists.
But still during lockup.
Yeah, during lockup.
This story came out like at 2:57 today.
Do you have an alert set?
I've been freaking out the entire show that this is happening.
I got to check out these letters.
I know this happens for guys. Like, guys that are murderers that are, like, there's women out there that get obsessed with them. We hear this all the time. Like, Charles Manson got a bunch of proposals or whatever he got. I haven't heard that often that it works the other way. This is good. This is equality. This is what we're looking for. This is progress in society.
You can tout my inexperience, but don't forget my years as a reporter, when sometimes the best thing you can do is just to let a source who is hanging himself talk. You just let him go.
That's a fantastic story.
And you just let them
story.
Keep talking. And you let the people make the decision for themselves, because I gave you the setup. You didn't come close to living up to
it. Can you... First of all, Look up Gypsy Rose and see if you would get engaged to Gypsy Rose.
All right, fine. That's what I will turn on. I have the Masters leaderboard on my computer right now, but I am just going to type in Gypsy Rose, and I get Gypsy Rose boyfriend. I get Gypsy Rose Blanchard. All right, I get lots of options here.
Oh, good.
And now I have an image search on Google, and... God bless Gypsy and her pen pal.
I feel like I'm in on Gypsy Rose as a potential fiance.
Partner. That's a little better than Cofield was the other day.
She's got that just right amount of crazy.
Just right? Are you kidding? I mean, well, you know
the
what?
Just right. What would be. Wait a minute. No. What's over the top? What would be the over the top amount of crazy?
I think if you really got into my.
Beyond the sexual deviant who killed her mother.
She will kill for you.
The mom deserved to die. She was awful. She had to. Now, I don't think she had to die in that manner.
Well,
it was a little bit over the top in the manner that they murdered her, but like she was awful. She did awful things to this girl. She convinced her she couldn't walk for like 10 years.
Number four.
Really? You don't want to just talk more about this?
No.
I am incredibly interested in it.
I am sure you're incredibly interested in it, but my job as Taskmaster here is to keep this thing on the rails, and we were decidedly off the rails into prison love and pen pals.
It's fantastic.
I am willing to take your scorn for getting us back into the wide, wide world of sports.
Don't make us tell Gypsy on you.
Number four.
Oh, damn.
I love Gypsy. She's great.
Damn, Daniel. All right. Masters ongoing. Apparently some Masters of another sort for Adam Hill and Chrissy. Five-way tie atop the Augusta leaderboard. And one of those players at the top of the leaderboard at 7-under is Jason Day. And that is fairly remarkable because Jason Day could have been out of this tournament.
He was close.
What happened to Jason Day, Adam?
Well, he was getting stretched out over on the side of the second tee on the first day, which was yesterday, of the Masters, and it was kind of a mystery of what was going on. How did he get hurt? It's so early in the round. What is going on with him? It turns out he hurt his back. So we know that, you know, golfers with back problems, nothing new. We know that with Tiger Woods and many others. But Jason Day hurt his back picking up his kid.
I would encourage you, if you haven't seen some of the stills of this, to take a look and see what was going on with Jason Day, because it's we'll call it interesting with the trainer and with his daughter, and it obviously hasn't slowed Jason Day down. Jason Day is right there at the top of the leaderboard.
Maybe
but
it inspired him.
Maybe it inspired him. Maybe it inspired him in the same way that after Tiger earlier got his ankle clipped by Sparky the Marshall, coming in to try to protect him from the hordes. He then went out and had two birdies in the next three holes. Maybe this is the path to success. Maybe the unspoken path to success at Augusta is a little bit of tough love.
Maybe, but maybe the other path to success is to not ever have kids.
Oh, really?
I mean, I guess it's not really hurting him. It hurt him, but it's not impacting his play. But isn't this just another reason why you should never have kids?
The big lead suggests that the lesson goes even farther than that. That the lesson is to never love anyone.
Okay,
ever.
Yeah. Yes. Because, you might get killed by
Keep
your
yourself.
Daughter. That's another reason not to have kids. Your daughter may kill you and then get married in prison. That's reason number 754.
This is the 11th crack commandment. You have to stay... all to yourself. Keep your love hidden away, baby, because you will never win the Masters. You will get killed by your offspring. I can't even go there, man. Like this, like you're like.
Twisted.
First of all, now I don't have to watch it. Like it's you covered the whole series for me right there. Like all spoiler alert.
That's the best part. That even though you know what happens, because you know what happens, they tell you right away.
You don't know how it happens.
Yeah, they tell you. And literally in the first 3 minutes, they say, and this ends up with the daughter killing the mom. Here's how it got there. So, like, you don't... That's not really a spoiler, even though it is the end. It's also the beginning. You're good. You can watch it. But...
Murderpedia it.
I don't think... Listen, I think Gypsy Rose is
not
justified.
Verb.
That's a thing.
Not a
yes,
verb.
I think Murderpedia is an actual thing.
Not a verb, though.
Well, Google is now a verb, so...
Yeah.
Murderpedia can be. It's a search engine, so Murderpedia.
Yeah, you get
and
it. Thank you.
If... it, like, I believe Gypsy Rose's murder of her mother was justified. I don't think it'd be justified if Jason Day killed his daughter for her causing his injury.
For him throwing his back up.
I think, yeah, I don't think that's a justifiable homicide.
We'll have to get Justin Watkins on that one.
I think so. Well, it would be an escalation of the conflict. So, I mean, I think that her hurting him, I think that killing her would be escalating, an escalating action. So I don't believe that it would be justified. I don't think you can claim self-defense.
Thank you, Barrister. Number three.
Number three.
Let's stay with disturbing things, because there currently is nothing more disturbing in all of sports media than the discussion of will the Bob Kraft video make its way out. And
this is very exciting.
It appears that there's a chance that this makes it out, which disturbs me to no ends, but all right.
Are you really not going to watch it?
Hell no. I'm not. I didn't watch the Auburn gymnast destroying her leg.
Oh, come on.
Nope. I don't need this in my life. There are enough disturbing things in my world.
Put it on the computer. So yeah.
God, no.
You have to watch it.
Michelle Steele from ESPN says, prosecutors just admitted at a hearing about the Robert Kraft video they will not charge anyone at Orchids of Asia with human trafficking. We have no evidence, prosecutors said, that there is human trafficking. Kraft's legal team, however, has seen the video. The attorney says, quote, it's basically pornography. Duh. You didn't say that. I did. I don't think there's interest the state has or the media has in publishing it. There's no need to actually see the video. Now, that is not the case from the other side.
Yeah, but aren't they just admitting that he's guilty by doing
this? Oh,
this
is filthy. We don't want to show.
It's basically pornography, but nothing happened. So
right.
What exactly is it then? What is pornography if nothing happened?
Maybe it's like, I'm not touching you.
Could you?
Oh, they played like the brother sister game. Is that what Bob Kraft dropped into the Orchids of Asia spa for?
We don't know what kind of sexual, you know, like fetishes
proclivities.
He has, right?
We don't know what his proclivities are. We don't know what he enjoys. Well, he's a man of means. We know he enjoys the Asian day spa.
It's true.
I like this idea though. I like the idea that he was playing the "I'm not touching you" like your big brother would do to you.
Wait, what? Like, what kind of sibling relationships do you have?
No, I'm not saying that it's a sexual version of that. What? I'm saying that Chrissy has turned it into a sexual version of that.
Like
sitting in the back of the car with your sibling on a long road trip, and your parents are like, "Don't you hit your brother." And so your brother leans across and he puts his hands right in your face. "I'm not touching you."
Or it could be like, you know, like instead of "who's your daddy," like "who's your favorite
great grandfather?"
Like "who's your we don't know what he's into. Yeah.
Who is your great grandfather?
Yeah, who's your like filthy uncle or something? We don't know.
All right, I've thought for a long time this Bob Kraft video story was more comedy than anything. Now it's just disturbing.
And that,
what
is
now happening? It's disturbing.
To me,
yeah,
that
it was
is
now.
Why they want to hide it because
I thought
there's
it was
something
funny.
Far more damning in it
yes.
than just it's, the act
yes.
that we assumed
no.
was going on.
No, it's just the act, and it's very damning and disturbing and awful. But it needs to be seen by everyone.
You thought it was comedy. Let me ask you this. I mean, the same. Remember, I asked you a minute ago if Luke Walton weren't the coach of the Lakers, would it have been a justifiable firing? Is there another 70-something who you want to see going through, we'll say, this process, who you're like, absolutely, I gotta watch that video?
No, because I don't think that there's anybody. I don't think.
Here we go. The man is flustered
because it happened.
Gypsy Rose, save him.
We just know that it happened. That's why. That's why this is interesting. Like, I don't want to pick somebody out and say, oh, yeah, I really want to see that person's sex tape. Like, no, it's not like that.
You want to see Bob Kraft?
Because we know that it happened. It's out there.
Well,
like,
we know
that's
that there's
a thing.
All right. We know that somewhere on the internet, there is another 70-year-old man going through a similar situation. Right? Huh? Have you sought that out?
No.
Then why do I have to watch the Bob Kraft video?
Because it's not... This
what
is not
the public
about...
interest in me watching the Bob Kraft
video?
Already...
It's hilarious.
Yeah, I filed the Freedom of Information Act request, so it's coming.
Right.
Whoa.
Don't say it. Whoa.
Woodward,
whoa,
Bernstein, and Paradis. Nope, I'm going right. Nope. Nope. Going right past it. Nope, nope, nope. You know what? I just told you I wouldn't watch the Auburn gymnast video. This car accident that just happened on the other side of the desk, I am driving right on past.
That's smart.
We
Appreciate it.
But I feel... Okay, this video is going to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
It is you are telling me that you are never, you're like, if you're at a party and people are like, yeah, look what, hey, look what's going on here.
I do not go to those parties. What is the party where someone holds up the phone and says, Adam, hey, you work in sports.
Oh,
you want to see this?
I'm gonna make a GIF and sending it to you.
Most likely
like...
gonna be me doing this at like. Hey, has everybody seen this?
That's true.
Everybody seen this video?
You know what? That's true. So the rule here is don't ever show up at a party that you're at because that's the first thing that's gonna happen to me. Number two. I have to turn back. Now, away from horrible things.
Bob Craft?
Yeah, I just got to turn away from Bob Craft and Orchids of Asia and Gypsy Rose and all sorts of things that
Gypsy Rose
are making me question my ability to function on this earth for much longer. All right, let's talk something. We'll call it in true Stephen Colbert fashion. This is not truthiness. This is sportsiness. Let's go to a little sportsiness now. Back to some sportsiness. Golden Knights playing tonight against San Jose Sharks. Game gets underway in just a little bit here. We've already done the whole, is this a must-win game? Consensus in studio. No, this is not a must-win game for the Golden Knights. But let's look past the Golden Knights for a second. You kind of hinted at this with Craig Button at the Calgary Flames, who really are a team that I don't think anyone has taken quite so seriously on the order of a... Tampa Bay or Nashville even, but the Calgary Flames,
Tampa Bay in real trouble tonight again, could be down 2-0 in a little bit.
I mean, well, you want to talk about teams that people haven't taken seriously. Columbus tried to sell everyone at the deadline. They couldn't sell Panarin, they couldn't sell Bobrovsky, and here they are in the playoffs potentially going to derail the winningest team in regular season history. What's the current situation for the Blue Jackets and Lightning?
2-0 Blue Jackets end first period.
Oh dear. Oh dear!
Not good for Tampa.
In alliterative terms, the Kucherov crowning is in trouble. Who is the most legit team in the West right now?
I actually do think it's San Jose, and that's just based on we didn't quite know what they would be, and I picked the Golden Knights in 7 going into the series because I still had questions about a lot of the injuries that San Jose had, especially Carlson. Had only played one game in the last like month and a half, is such a key part of their team. Pavelski had been hurt. Timo Meier was hurt. All these guys were hurt, and they were going to be coming back, but who knew how good they would be? I think when they are fully healthy and playing well, they're the best team in the West. Now, there's certainly a question about Martin Jones, but Martin Jones played well enough in the first game and didn't really get tested very much. So if the Sharks play like that and limit opportunities from other teams, he won't be that much of an issue. I think when they are at their best, they're the best team in the West. But Calgary is kind of similar in that they are a very high-scoring team. They're very dynamic, have playmakers all over the ice, but they have questions in net. But yesterday, Mike Smith stopped every shot that he saw from Colorado. So all of a sudden, if Mike Smith gets hot and is an effective goaltender, to go along with all the offense that they have and all the playmakers that they have, they are all of a sudden a very legit contender as well.
I'm going to flip what you said around and talk about goaltending because the way Jordan Binnington is...
As we're speaking, yeah. Columbus 3,
oh,
Tampa Bay 0.
My goodness. For any of you out there, for anyone who just decided to throw even $10 at the series price on Columbus... Good for you, because you're at least going to enjoy the rest of your evening the way this is headed. We're pulling this up right now. 13:24 left in the second period, and the Tampa Bay Lightning in a world of hurt, looking at potentially having to go to Columbus down 2-0 against a pretty damn good goaltender in Sergei Bobrovsky. Now, I was just talking about Jordan Binnington for St. Louis, and we saw, I would say, the best I could say is Jean-Sebastien Jaguar, where one goaltender with a team that's not all that fantastic may be able to carry you all that far. I have to feel like St. Louis right now is as dangerous as any team in the West. With as hot as they got, with as well as Binnington is playing, you can win a lot of 1-0, 2-0, 2-1 games when you have a guy playing the way he is right now. St. Louis is a dangerous team, and you just talked about Winnipeg. We don't know if Winnipeg's any good anymore.
No.
That might not be much of a series. St. Louis might walk in the conference semifinals.
No, and I still love Nashville, and I think Nashville is very capable of doing it, but they lost game one at home as well. So, you know, I think they rally, and I think they beat Dallas, and I think they get by either St. Louis or Winnipeg, and they're the ones that are waiting there for either, you know, Vegas, San Jose, or Calgary. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. He could be good enough to just carry them for who knows how far. You know, last year, Marc-Andre Fleury carried the Knights pretty far, but that was a good team around him, and then he finally kind of hit a wall in the final. So who knows how long these things last? Nobody really thought, you know, Binnington's great start was going to last a month and then 2 months and then all the way into the playoffs. But he's still going, and he's carrying them, so they could be very dangerous as well.
All right, so I kind of cheated on number two. We were going to talk Golden Knights. We ended up talking about the Western Conference. So number one is, of course, the Vegas Golden Knights. And game two against the San Jose Sharks up at SAP Center. Adam, if you were in Gerard Gallant's shoes, you saw how your team performed in game one. What lineup changes are you making?
Well, I think the easy, like, I still have a lot of concerns about Derek England as a defenseman. I think he just continues to lose speed. He was always, you know, he was never the fastest guy, but he's a step even slower. I think he's been exposed a little bit even more as the season has kind of progressed, and he's getting up there in age. I believe he's 37, so I wouldn't mind seeing him be the odd man out among the defenders, but I know that he won't be. They trust him way too much, and he will be out there in the lineup. I do expect Colin Miller to be in. He was scratched. He was, you know, they basically have seven defensemen on the roster right now. They can only play six. He was the one left out. He was scratched the other night, and the defense as a whole was terrible. I expect Colin Miller to be back in. If you look at the numbers, the analytics will tell you and the goal differential will tell you that Colin Miller and John Merrill together is the best of that third defensive pair. So I expect that to be the one. They didn't go with the analytics in the first game. I think they will today, and they'll look at that and say, that's the pairing. We're going to go with them and move Holden to the bench for tonight's game. And then among the forwards, there's basically one spot open. It's the third, you know, it's one wing position on the third line. They've got Cody Eakin with Alex Tuch, and then either Carpenter, Nosek, or Brandon Peary. Brandon Peary, obviously the pure offensive option. Tomas Nosek, more of a defensive-minded, like, hard-nosed guy. And then Carpenter, more the all-around, nothing spectacular guy. I think they go Carpenter because I think they Gallant loves Ryan Carpenter. Ryan Carpenter, is, you know, he's a former Shark, has history with them, knows them well. I think they trust everything they get from him, and they need trustworthy players tonight after that debacle as far as turning the puck over so much the other night. So I would think Carpenter goes in at that spot, and I would think it's Miller and Merrill in the third defensive pair.
Yeah, I have to agree wholeheartedly on the Holden thing. If you want to talk about avoiding turnovers, Holden's turnover led directly to one of San Jose's goals. You look at that third line, I don't think you're going to expect San Jose to just stop scoring. And no matter how Marc-Andre Fleury plays, that team is going to score goals. That, to me, kind of leans Brandon Peary a little bit. I'd like to see someone who is that pure offensive option, who I know he hasn't been scoring at the same rate that he was late in the season, that he was early in the season, but I wouldn't mind seeing that move for the third line.
And by the way, at some point during the series, that spot will probably go to Nikita Gusev.
I love that. Well, we have some breaking Mountain West news on the other side of this break. One of the best players in the conference is headed to the draft. Who is it? Find out in a minute. Cofield and Company.
The Big 5 at 5 is brought to you by Battle Born Injury Lawyers. Call them today for a free consultation at 702-570-9000. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Toward Marchessault, take it away. Sharks get it out. Far side, stone rushing back, shot toward the net. They score! Empty net goal for Tomas Hertl with a minute 49 to go in regulation. 5-2 San Jose.
Vegas Golden Knights Radio Network, Sharks and Golden Knights upcoming in just a bit here with Adam Hill, Chrissy in the studio. I'm Adam Candy. Cofield's out. Kevin Kurz from The Athletic covers the San Jose Sharks is in. How you doing, Kevin?
Good. How you guys doing?
We are good, except for I'm very mad right now. Not at you, but listen, I referenced the Tiger Woods being taken out on the course as he should have gotten a straight red card. You went with the much better Kramer as a ball boy reference.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
God, that was good.
That really was. It really was fantastic. It just goes to show how San Jose is on top of Vegas right now. Like, it's very clear
yes.
that in all ways, the Bay Area has the advantage at the moment. We know that the Sharks came out, Kevin, and played, I mean, to our eyes at least, that has to be the best game that the Sharks have played in at least a month. I mean, you've been watching it closely. They did not finish well. They seemed to turn it on very well in game one. Was that as well as the Sharks have played in quite a while?
Well, yeah, it's amazing what happens when you add a two-time Norris Trophy winner back into your lineup, and he appears to be, at least close to 100%, maybe not even quite 100%, but Erik Karlsson, I thought, was outstanding, and, you know, that was the big question mark for me coming into this series was the health of the two most important players, one guy on each side, Erik Karlsson, and I would say Marc-Andre Fleury on the other side, and, you know, Karlsson from our end, he missed a whole lot of time. He came back there in the season finale, and then he played 26 minutes there in game one. There really seemed to be no restrictions on him, and you can see how he just helps every facet of the Sharks game. You know, they're moving through the neutral zone. He's setting up guys in the offensive zone. The penalty kill, which is kind of an underrated facet of his game, at least for this team this year. You know, he was the penalty kill minute leader in game one, and you know, that unit was pretty good for the Sharks. So, you know, as long as he stays healthy and he plays those 26 minutes a game, you know, maybe even more, the Sharks are a tough team to beat because we saw them play their best hockey when Karlsson was at his best, which was from about, you know, early December through middle of January up until the first time he hurt his groin.
Well, like any good reporter, you're always kind of ahead to the next question. You beat me there on Erik Karlsson. He's one of those players where when he's right and you see him out there, there are very few players where you just look at them with and without the puck and you feel like they are controlling the game. The game has to go through them in order for the tempo to be set. But for Vegas fans who haven't had a chance to see Erik Karlsson that much, how would you describe his impact on the Sharks game?
Yeah, I mean, we saw it there again in that time frame I referenced, but early on, it wasn't really there for him. I think he had to play himself into shape a little bit. He missed most of training camp. You know, he only got in one or two preseason games, if I recall. And so there was obviously the adjustment period, too, with your new teammates and your new surroundings and a whole lot going on. You know, he had a pretty tumultuous 12 months there before the trade, playing for a bad Ottawa team and some other stuff going on. So, you know, it did take a little while. There was an adjustment. I think, you know, the team as a whole wasn't really all there, weren't working all that hard, I think, for the first 6 weeks, and it showed. And then, you know, they turned it on in December, and Karlsson was probably their best player. There was a six-game homestand in the middle of November where he was probably, you know, he looked like he started to settle in a little bit. And, you know, again, he helps all facets of their game. You know, he can get the puck out of the defensive end, which helps against an aggressive forecheck, which is obviously something that Vegas tries to do. Power play, you know, you got him or Brent Burns out at all times on a power play, which is a luxury that probably no other NHL has, I would think.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're out there both at the same time. Again, the penalty kill, I was shocked at the numbers. The Sharks penalty kill with Karlsson, without Karlsson, was pretty drastic, something like 10 percentage points, which was not something I expected come into this season. But, you know, that said, he did miss a lot of time. He hurt his groin there in January, came back too early, got hurt again, and then he was out for the last 6 weeks of the season other than that season finale. So I'm not sure we knew what we were going to get out of him. And frankly, I'm not sure, you know, we know what we're going to get moving forward just because he did miss so much time. But if you're a Sharks fan, you watch him out there in game one, it's certainly an encouraging development that he was able to play so many minutes and also just play so effectively.
I want to get into Babysittergate because I'm very fascinated by kind of the back and forth there. But, you know, I was up there covering the game on the 30th, the final regular season meeting, and I was struck by some of the guys on the Sharks side saying that it was the first time they hadn't taken a step back against Ryan Reeves and, you know, some of the physical play of the Knights, that they actually, you know, not only, you know, absorbed it, but they were the aggressor and they stood toe-to-toe with them and they didn't get pushed around. And I thought that kind of set a tone for what we saw in game one. So how important was the Sharks just kind of being physical and standing up to whatever physical play the Knights wanted to bring?
Yeah, it's certainly important, and I think the Sharks consider themselves a heavy team, and it's not just Evander Kane, you know, and Michael Haley, you know, he's a fourth-line guy in and out of the lineup. He kind of is what he is, but there's other guys that are some of their top goal scorers that play a physical game that do hit, whether it's Timo Meier, Thomas Hertl, Kane. Joe Thornton obviously is a big body. He doesn't always shy away from that physical stuff. So, you know, Pete DeBoer is kind of an old-school coach. You know, he's not above maybe telling certain guys on his team to go send a message to the other team. It's happened before, and I think that's part of the reason that, you know, first of all, that's why they went out and got Evander Kane last year, because that was definitely missing in their lineup until they got him, and he certainly brings that element. But just the development of guys like Meyer and Hurdle, and even a little guy like Marcus Sorensen, I'll get into it with Cody Eakin there in the third period.
You know what? I got to tell you, Adam, it's old school when you get the actual hang-up tone. I feel like I'm living my childhood out there one more time. Try to call that girl you like, and you just keep getting that over and over again. She eventually just takes the phone off the hook like, yeah, I know. That's Kevin Kurz from The Athletic, covers the San Jose Sharks.
Sad reflection on your youth.
Oh, there's many sad reflections on my youth. I told you, buddy, don't you come for my mediocre at everything title. So, San Jose Sharks and Vegas Golden Knights tonight. We're starting to hear from Kevin more about the physical play. And for those of you who did not see the quote from between Ryan Reeves and Evander Kane, Adam, fill you in.
Yeah, so the Sharks have been calling Ryan Reeves the Knights' babysitter. So, essentially... And if you watch, I get where they're coming from on that, because Ryan Reeves is, you know, he's out there and he's trying to watch every single thing that happens, and it's clear that every time somebody goes after somebody on the Knights, Ryan Reeves is there. And that's his job. He gets it and he embraces that. So I understand why Ryan Reeves does it. I understand, you know, why the Knights love that Ryan Reeves does it, and I understand the Sharks kind of coming after him for it. I think the very interesting thing about this is that they're willing to say it now, because, as I said, for so long, the Sharks allowed themselves to kind of take a step back, get pushed around a little bit by the Knights. That last game of the regular season, they were very adamant. We did not step back. We stood toe-to-toe with him. We went back at him. We are not going to be scared of him. We're not going to be intimidated by him. And that gave them some confidence. And now you saw the way they played in game one. Same thing. Were physical with him. Went toe-to-toe with him. Even were the aggressor in some cases. And I think now it's a combination of confidence and saying, hey, we're confident that we are the aggressors now. We're more physical and we're going to tell you about it. And so we're willing to say, hey, you're their babysitter and that's all you are. And then it's also, I think, trying to get to Ryan Reeves and trying to get in his head and make him do some things that he wouldn't ordinarily do, kind of revert to the old Ryan Reeves of being, you know, over-aggressive and taking dumb penalties and things like that that he hasn't done, and they're trying to get him to do those things. So I think it's a combination of both the confidence that they are able to play physical and step, you know, take the first step, and also trying to get in reset.
For those of you who were not watching the first couple of games after Ryan Reeves came over from Pittsburgh last year, I mean, that's the Ryan Reeves we saw. He took a couple bad penalties. He had to get himself out of Gallant's doghouse right after that.
And he was trying to do everything.
Yeah, he was. And you don't blame a guy coming over after a trade for trying to do that. But I actually go back a little farther with this to the game that San Jose played in Vegas where they lost 5-0. I mean, they were down 5-0 in a heartbeat. I believe the final was 6-0 ultimately in that game. And Evander Kane got kicked out of that game. Yep. And Evander Kane went nuts. I mean, Evander Kane lost it in that game, and the ref went nuts along with him. I mean, the ref was going like Billy Crystal, giving them the tease and like going nuts.
Was that Forget Paris?
That was a Forget Paris reference right there.
Okay.
So, but Evander Kane kind of set a tone for his team in that game. And right before this series, Evander Kane also came out and said, "Yeah, we know they don't like us. Like, we don't like them." And when you do that, it's not just the confidence of playing well on the ice. You got to force yourself to have to back those words up, too. And the Sharks, but through Evander Kane, put themselves in that spot. You're either going to come out and actually get physical and back it up, or you're going to get punked. And the Sharks in game one came out and lived up to it. And that's what they've set up now as the tone for the rest of this series. And so now you put the Golden Knights and Ryan Reeves and anybody else in a place to say, how are you going to respond? And now the pressure really is on Vegas, at least in terms of that. It, again, stop it with the must win. Anybody who's worried about it after game one, they're coming home. Even if they lose tonight, you still have the better goalie in the series. But you have had a challenge issued to you, no question.
Yeah, and you know, Ryan Reeves kind of laughed it off, as you would expect, and he said, I must be the highest paid babysitter in the world then, which is funny and true and everything else. But you know, we'll see if he's able to maintain that in the game. Now, if you watch, like he's out there, and he almost gets mad that the Sharks keep doing things when he's not on the ice, because they clearly are trying to do that. They're getting more physical when he's not out there, to even, I think, to tell him, like, hey, nothing you can do about it unless you want to come out here and get, you know, a game misconduct for jumping into something. They are playing right on the edge, and they're trying to get in their head. Now, when do they go too far and, you know, provide motivation and you know, the whole quote-unquote bulletin board material thing, that it's kind of a silly concept, but when do they go too far and really fire up the rest of the Golden Knights to then come out and do something about it? Or, you know, you're playing that line. Either the Knights react the wrong way and get, you know, sloppy and get over aggressive and take penalties that they shouldn't take and, you know, get mad about it in that way, or they respond and channel it all in the right direction and, you know, use that to you know, destroy the Sharks, and we'll see which direction they go. But, you know, the Sharks are kind of playing with a little bit of fire, but it could work out well for them.
Yeah, I think Gerard Gallant would actually look at it and say, you shouldn't need that fire. Like, if you're the Golden Knights, you shouldn't need the bulletin. Yeah, you don't need the bulletin board material to fire up. I think what's impressive for the Sharks is that look at who the Sharks were over the past few years. Like, this was a team that was mental. Like, this is a team that got in its own heads. This is a team that lost big leads. This is a team that, even down the stretch this year, just didn't look good. So to come out and play the way they did in game one, behind what Evander Kane said, behind Evander Kane even mixing it up in that game with Ryan Reeves, behind a huge hit from Timo Meier that kind of set the tone in that game, the Sharks are even challenging themselves to play a different game right now. And I think that's kind of the impressive thing about what San Jose has done. And when you combine that with the fact that it's probably the deepest forward group in the West, Tampa Bay can claim that on the East, and you could say who's better. It is by far the best set of defensemen in the Western Conference, probably in the league. So, you know, we know where the difference is in goal for this San Jose team. So when you combine the talent with that attitude, that's a dangerous team.
Yeah, no question. And I am interested certainly in how the game plays out tonight, but I am fascinated to see if there will be a Kane versus Reeves fight.
I'd pay for that.
Or do we go one step further and say a guy like Derek England, who has been an enforcer in his career, has been in a lot of fights, is a very capable fighter, if he goes to Kane and says, oh yeah, I don't need a babysitter, let's go, and if something happens there. I'll be very interested to see if somebody goes after Kane.
And on the other side, will Haley respond? Because Haley's got that in him too, to play the pest, and maybe not the size of the enforcer of Ryan Reeves, but yeah, he's not scared to mix it up either.
No, but nobody wants any part of Reeves.
I don't want any part of Reeves.
Nobody does.
No thank you, sir. No way.
He welcomes it. He will fight anybody, but I don't think anybody wants him.
Golden Knights and Sharks coming up in just a little bit. It's been a big day in basketball, too. I promise you some news on the Mountain West and a big transfer in the Mountain West. I won't tease you any longer after this one coming up in the Grab Bag.
Grab Bag is presented by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas. Try world-class restaurants like Chart House, Grotto Italian Ristorante, Vic and Anthony Steakhouse, and the Cadillac Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar. Only at the Golden Nugget Las Vegas. Grab Bag is presented by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas.
Want it? Check it out.
Grab Bag.
Smells like fish in here.
Hey, don't touch that. That's nothing to play with, man.
On ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Head nod out on a Friday afternoon. Cofield and Company, Adam, and Chrissy. Mountain West news from a couple of schools. We know Steve Alford was announced as the head coach at Lawler Events Center for the Wolfpack today, and probably the best returning player that he was looking at potentially having to keep has already announced he's in. Jazz Johnson coming back. He has already said he is in, and we'll see if that leads to some of the other transfers for the Wolfpack coming back, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big one, certainly, that they wanted to keep in the mix, and they've got a whole bunch of other guys, but I think it's a good sign for Steve Alford and his program that one of his key, in fact, the leading returning scorer, had entered the portal and then decided after hearing his press conference is all he needed to hear, and he's like, I'm in, I'm committing.
That's impressive. All right.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Staying in the Mountain West, and Utah State has an interesting one on their hands, and one that honestly I'm just not surprised about because he had a coming out party at the Mountain West tournament, and anybody who hadn't seen him play in person was kind of blown away by watching Utah State's Nemias Keita, and he has declared for the NBA draft. So the best returning player that Utah State had has declared. Not sure yet if he's going to hire an agent and be gone. He might just be testing the waters in the draft process, but you can make an argument for Keita coming back and being right in the mix for Mountain West Player of the Year next year, and Utah State takes a huge blow if he's gone.
Yeah, especially, you know, with the way he was able to improve and then step up his game even more late in the season and in the Mountain West tournament. I mean, he was playing at a ridiculous level and certainly showing really positive signs. Now, he's a guy who, you know, they got late. Craig Smith kind of stole him and got him in there and then really did great with him. So, yeah, it's a huge blow for them. It's also a huge credit to what they were able to do in finding him, developing him, and getting him ready to jump in the NBA this quickly. That's impressive what they did, but it will leave a huge hole in the roster if he's gone.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Let's go old school for a minute. We know who is at the Aviators opener that Chrissy did not get to hang out with. One Orenthal James Simpson.
Yeah, he was there.
Yeah, OJ was there. I don't think Chris Darden was there.
No.
But Chris Darden has another interesting client right now, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's representing the Nipsey Hussle killer.
That's kind of crazy. Like, I can't believe that we're...
Every big case.
I'm telling you, man, like, that the guy is back after this many years in another hugely high-profile case like this.
Yeah, good for him getting back. Hopefully get in the win column this time.
Vegas Golden Knights trying to join Chris Darden in the win column? I don't know. I'm trying to tie this one together.
Wait, no, Chrissy, what event is going on in Southern California, the big concert that you were talking about?
The Coachella concert.
And you said it was what kind of a show?
It was like a hippie, indie, you know, like thing.
Not really. I mean, huge headliners all the time.
You know who's going to be at Coachella?
Who's?
Spinderella.
Oh, okay. That's good.
She's going to kick it up one time.
No, Ariana Grande might reunite NSYNC at Coachella, so this would be tremendous. Don't hate on Coachella. It's Coachella. Childish Gambino headlining also.
But will she steal Pete Davidson back? That's the real question we need to know. Golden Knights and Sharks underway in a bit. See you over Monday.